Hello and welcome to GoGo Radio, found exclusively on GoGo.com. My name is Kevin Flanagan, and in this show we are going to discuss XML, why it exists, what issues it addresses, and where it seems to be headed. To learn more about me and my background, be sure to check out my GoGo profile. If you have any questions you would like to ask me, please use the question comment box below. All right, let's get started. The first question we really need to ask ourselves when we talk about XML, and we're going to see that this opens up the discussion of markup languages in general, is why do they exist? And to really talk about why they exist, we need to talk about some of the common issues that they address. The first of these issues would be that we have problems, for example, in sharing documents. Okay, person A needs a document that person B has, and they have to share the document. Well, the document exists in one place but with person A, but when person B gets it, that document may not be compatible with their level of the software. It may have a format that's not recognizable to the software. It's the data that's needed. So we need something to address some of the issues for formatting, or what might force us to have conversion. That would be one particular problem. Another problem that we might have is searching for a document. Okay. We know that a document exists, but we're not quite sure where it exists. And when we do find documents, it may not be readily apparent to us what the storage mechanism for those documents is. It can be a variety of files. We know we probably could say, yes, it's a flat file, but is it a Word document? Is it a WordPerfect document? Is it from some old type of word processor that no one has anymore? So usually that means we have to open the document to at least try to take a peek at it. And when I say open it, we have to attempt to open it. We may not have the tools available to us to open the document. But if we do get beyond that problem of searching for the document, the next thing we probably want to take a look at is the document itself. So we might want to have a mechanism for searching for text within the document. And one of the problems that we have with text is context. And when we say context, we may have similar strings that have different meanings on depending on where they're used. So we've already identified a couple of different problems that exist with data itself. A couple of larger problems, or at least that are more current in the field, would be transferring data. Okay. When we talk about transferring data, we start to get into the issue of data as an enterprise asset. And maybe the best topic, or maybe the best way of specifying it, is not so much transferring data, but how to use data in different areas. So data can be stored. Let's suppose our enterprise has a data center in Des Moines and a data center in Birmingham, Alabama. Well, it's easy enough to have our machines networked and we can access the data, but are we guaranteed, again, that the data, although the information is important to the people in Birmingham, what's stored in Des Moines may not have the correct format. So it's not really usable at an enterprise level, and that's something we want to ensure. Well, we were just talking about transferring data. But transferring data also opens up the aspect of how do we integrate our data. This is, again, using data at an enterprise level. Do we want to reinvent the wheel? Do we want to have redundant data all through our system? So we can start to see that a lot of the problems that we encounter have to do with data in general. So how do we address these things about data? Well, as we said, incompatible data formats, the fact that we may not have software that understands that format anymore, those are problems. Everyone loves to document, so that there may not be available documentation to tell us exactly what that data is about. So how do we address this? One of the ways of addressing it, and one of the early ways of addressing it, was the introduction of markup languages. Probably the very first one that the first one we'll consider, but one of the very early ones was something called SGML, Okay. SGML stands for Standard Generalized Markup Language, and it's been around since about 1974. It's what's called a meta-markup language. And one of the concepts of a markup language or a meta-markup language is it means it defines not only a syntax, but a grammar. And what we're saying is syntax and grammar, it means this. The terms we'll normally use are tags and attributes. And a tag would be something that says, I contain this type of information. An attribute would say, here is this type of information. So for our purposes, the grammar would indicate at a very high level, we have something, for example, called a person. Here's our person. The attributes would say, here's the last name, the first name, middle initial, home address, contact information, email. So those would be lower levels of detail information, but those would be mentioned in the markup. Okay. Now, one of the problems with SGML was that SGML was really very complicated. Okay. It was too difficult to use. It wasn't easy to parse. I did have the concept of tags and markups, or tags and attributes, but it wasn't readily or easily usable. And then after SGML was adapted, something else came along, HTML. Now, HTML was much easier to understand, used the same concepts of tags, used the same concepts of attributes, but they were much more limited in scope. We didn't have to define a lot of grammar around them. And HTML became popular within browsers. Now, one of the first browsers out was Mosaic. Now, the browser could interpret the HTML language because of its simplicity. Again, HTML, hypertext markup language. And that was developed back in the early 90s, and one of the fellows instrumental in it was Mark Andreessen. But when it was developed, now browsers could work with it, but now we went back to look at SGML, and again, the same problems that SGML had had were still evident with browsers. It was just a little bit too cumbersome to use. So something needed to be developed that kind of addressed the middle ground, something that was a little bit like HTML in its simplicity and a little bit like SGML in its flexibility and its ability to describe things. And that's where XML came along. Think of XML as kind of fitting in kind of halfway between HTML and SGML. Okay? So XML is in fact derived from SGML, but what it does is it really greatly simplifies many of the constructs that SGML uses. It's been around since about 1998 when it was first approved, but it's more flexible and more expressive than HTML. Okay. So the working standards for XML were developed by the World Wide Web Consortium, as we mentioned back in 95. Okay. They were approved as a standard in 98. And what it was attempted to do was that since HTML could be used in a browser, but SGML didn't seem to lend itself nicely to being used in a browser, XML would allow us that expressive power in more sophisticated web pages. Okay, that was one of the first ideas behind it. So HTML was considered to be a little bit too limited. The tag set couldn't be expanded. The hierarchy of the tags was a bit difficult, not so much difficult to navigate, but not very deep in structure. And specialized content was a problem. Okay. So XML's context was to attempt to reduce that. Okay. Stay with the idea of elements or tags, stay with the idea of attributes, but make it more expressive than HTML, but not nearly as complex as SGML. Okay, well, when that started to take root, a couple of other things happened. Okay. One of which was that XML started to be used to address some of those very, very common data issues. Okay. the data issues such as how do we start to utilize data from more than one place, and how do we know how to interpret it when we receive it, if the formats might be different. Well, in addition to defining a grammar, and we should say, let's make the term specific, we'll say syntax. In addition to defining a syntax, what XML actually would do was go one step further and define rules of grammar. How do we use the syntax? So when we talk about XML documents, we'll talk about two things. One is whether it's syntactically correct. Does it follow the rules of its syntax? In which case, it's simply referred to as well-formed. And another is to say, okay, is the XML document adhering to the rules of its grammar? Now, the rules of grammar or a schema is slightly different than the rules of syntax. For example, the rules of syntax might say that an element has to be bounded by a less than and greater than symbol. That's what constitutes a tag or an element. Elements contain attributes. Attributes are always key value pairings where the value is enclosed as a quoted string. That's simple syntax. If we have an element called A, it can encompass an element called B. That would be a child element. But B can't be terminated outside the boundaries of A. Again, an other syntax requirement. Once the syntax requirements are satisfied and an XML document is construed to be well-formed, the next thing it needs to be, if we're using a grammar, and there is no requirement that we use it, although that's where the true power of XML comes in, we can say something about what the nature of the content of an element looks like. And when we talk about the nature of the content of an element, we can start to talk about what types of children it has. Children would be those elements that are totally encompassed or enclosed within the enclosing tag. Okay, so A is the parent of B. Well, that starts to sound a little bit like our syntax definition where we said that, well, B can't be closed outside of the closure of A. However, what we're also saying is that we can make up rules that say that an A element can have one and only one B child, or it could have more than one, or it can have a specific number. Also, we can say that if a particular element has multiple types of children, what's the relationship among the children? Do we have, for example, the situation where the B element or the B child of A must always precede the C child, which always must precede the D child? Okay, that would be called something like a sequence. Okay. So we can control the number and the relationship. And that was something that was missing or is missing in the pure idea of just raw flat files. So now we're starting to get a little closer to that idea of how do we transfer data from one system to another? How do we use data at the enterprise level? The advantage of this now is that we have a syntax that the data must follow. So whoever receives it knows whether or not it follows its syntax. If there is a grammar associated with it, people always know when they receive it that it needs to adhere to its grammar also. Adhering to the grammar is called valid. So to reiterate, if an XML document is syntactically correct, it's well-formed. If it is grammatically correct, it is considered valid. But this opens up an entire world of applications for XML. And this is really the first area where XML started to take off was in data transfer from disparate systems. For example, a system that's running on Unix producing a flat file that needed to go to an IBM MVS mainframe. Well, that always created kinds of problems because one of the things that the receiving app had to do was probably have a lot of front-end code that did nothing but scrub the data and validate it. Well, with XML, if it's XML that carries a grammar, you know the syntax has to be in place. If it passes the grammar, many of the grammatical issues or the editing issues, we don't have to do the scrubbing, the editing that would have to be done. That means less cycles burnt, the editing facilities are built into the language itself. Not all of them. I'm not saying certainly that XML resolves all editing issues, but it resolves a lot of the real laborious ones. You know, is it this data type? Okay, does it have this particular string of characters in it? Those issues are very, very easily supplied in an XML grammar. So that was the first thing that XML really started to address. It addressed the idea of saying, okay, what we're going to do is have something that we can transfer across our enterprise systems, and they can feed the data to each other without a lot of onerous work on the end of the receiving app. The second issue, or the second area that it started to be utilized for, was in the early days of Java, when the idea of J2EE, Java 2 Enterprise Edition, actually before that, even just Java EE. How do you deploy things? How do you know something's a servlet? How do you know what type of EJB you're dealing with? Those types of things were specified in an XML file. So XML then took on kind of its second tier of applicability, and this was in the idea of deployment descriptors. That's the term that would be used in Java EE to say, I know that when I deal with this web artifact, I'm dealing with something that's a servlet. It's a JSP. It's an EJB. That was the information that was gained from looking at an XML document. The third area that XML started to become very, very important for was the idea of web services. Okay. Web services have several XML languages in them. Okay. XML is used as the technology stack for web services. One of the things is WSDL, okay? Web Services Definition Language. The Web Services Definition Language describes for a web service its endpoint, where is it located on the web, what operations are available in that web service. If you want to invoke that operation, what types of parameters do you need to supply? When we say what types of parameters, we mean things like, well, what's its data type? What order do parameters have to be passed in? Does the operation take more than one? Well, we would have to know the sequence. That's all specified in WSDL. There's lots of other things, but that will give us an idea of WSDL and its analogies to things like request processing, remote procedure calls. That might even be a better term. We can talk about what a remote procedure is. So XML and WSDL, XML's flavor as WSDL, because WSDL is an XML dialect. Generally, any type of markup that is XML in nature that performs a particular function is usually referred to as something like a dialect. After WSDL, another important dialect within web services is SOAP, Simple Object Access Protocol. That was its original meaning. Now, SOAP just means SOAP because people said that web services don't have anything inherently to do with object orientation. So very briefly, what we tried to do in this radio program was to sum up, where did XML come from? What types of things can we use it for? And we've barely scratched the surface. We did mention a couple of major things, enterprise application integration, web services, and its use for data transfer. Okay. So I hope you enjoyed today's presentation. If you have any questions or comments, please use the question comment box below. Okay. If you're interested in viewing my other shows, just search the GoGo Radio Archive for Kevin Flanagan. If there is a show you would like me to do, please send me an email and let me know. Thanks for your time today, and remember to tune in to the GoGo Radio, found exclusively on GoGo.com. Thank you.